investors more confidence in the banking system as we begin a new week. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Chinese President Xi Jinping will meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin Monday and spend at least 2 days in Moscow. The world watching to see what comes of the meetings between the two leaders. Xi's government has not said what it hopes to accomplish, while Putin will likely seek support for his war effort in Ukraine. This is ABC News. The parents of a 20-year-old college wrestler in Kentucky who died of heat stroke has settled with the University of the Cumberlands for more than $14 million. The family's attorney says Grant Brace desperately tried to get water.
He was found collapsed nearby, not far from a shut-off water fountain.
He was on all fours, and he had dug his hands in the dirt.
Brace's parents accusing two coaches at the University of the Cumberlands in Kentucky of denying him water after a so-called punishment practice of sprinting up and down a hill with steep incline 7 times, according to the lawsuit.
Ultimately, it killed him.
In their lawsuit against the school, Brace's family claims the coaches in the wrestling room yelled at fellow student athletes who tried to provide him water, insisting Grant needed to get the water himself.
That's ABC's M. Nguyen. Scientists say they believe mysterious streaks of light that were seen in the sky over Northern California on Friday were burning up remains of space junk jettisoned from the ISS 3 years ago. Mark Remillard, ABC News.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
Dear hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. The doctor came in and said, we're going to amputate your leg. I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Anything you ever did in politics that was useful as far as they brought someone in to...
No, usually politics stuff was kind of these grandiose, you know, get into the minds of voters and connect with them and all this, you know. It was kind of like Aaron Rodgers' ayahuasca ceremony, you know. I mean, it didn't really go anywhere.
I am disappointed because I would think when you're in politics, they would have breakout sessions of... remaining completely expressionless when your candidate says something moronic. Developing the perfect simper for when you sit behind the governor and he's signing something you don't like.
SNL sketch or maybe an Asgos, Wisconsin sketch. Jane comes up with what tutorials you need to be a staffer in the Madison's Capitol.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome to the St. Patrick's Day edition of As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry, she is Jane Matinair. And what questions do you have about the upcoming spring election? 844-967-2789, because we... are joined by an expert for this segment, for this half hour. Lana Kropp is a 12-year veteran of the Wisconsin clerk world. She currently is the city clerk for the city of Lake Geneva and is serving as the secretary for the Wisconsin Municipal Clerks Association. And this upcoming election is going to be her 40th that she's administered in her career. So welcome to As Goes Wisconsin, Lana.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
We're so happy to have you. I think you are the first clerk that we've had on the show, despite as much as we like talking about voting and elections. We talked a lot about elections last fall.
Yeah.
But this is your inaugural clerk, Lana.
Oh, man. That's a tall order to fill. Oh, my gosh.
So I guess let's start with let's demystify what city clerks do. Because, I mean, in Wisconsin, we vote a lot, so I think we keep you guys pretty busy. But just kind of break down with responsibilities with the election, but then also responsibilities outside of elections.
Sure. So there's a lot that we do. Us clerks, we're always busy. Elections is a big part of it because, as you guys are aware, Wisconsin is a very interesting state in that our elections are very decentralized, and mm-hmm. and the municipal clerks in each municipality, whether you're a town of 200 or a city of 500,000, you're the one in charge of it. So we deal with elections. We deal with all of the licensing for our municipalities, like liquor and tobacco. How very fitting that, you know, we talk about alcohol on St. Patty's Day.
I see that you are wearing green, so...
Of course,
represent.
Of course. Had to. Apparently, I'm Irish.
Oh.
But that's what my mom says. So I don't know how accurate that is. So we'll go with it.
We'll go with it.
what else? We do agendas, minutes, resolutions, ordinances. We're the records custodians for everything for the city. We handle border review. We do a number of things. And then, of course, that all changes depending on your municipality. So what might be my list of duties that I have to do for a city could be vastly different than, say, a town clerk or a village clerk.
Interesting. And so how did you find this as a career?
It's kind of a funny story. So, back in 2010, I graduated from UW-Whitewater.
Okay.
And I was looking for a job and couldn't find anything. And finally my mom found an ad for, the city of, Fort Atkinson looking for a 3/4-time receptionist. And I applied for it, got passed over, and then actually ended up getting the job. And little did I know that when I came into that position, I was actually going to be trained to become the new deputy clerk, as the current one that was there was retiring. So trained for that, became the deputy clerk, and then became a city clerk in 2014 for the city of Stoughton. And then I made the transition to Lake Geneva here in 2017.
There you go. It was funny. Did you hear about the drama? This is a side note. This has nothing to do with elections. But do you have an opinion about the drama of the big mansion that's going to be torn down in Lake Geneva after being bought for $17 million? Do you have no idea what I'm talking about?
I do, but I don't really know.
Well, Lake Geneva, very, very beautiful place. But so I guess you mentioned this before, but Wisconsin elections are unique in that we're very decentralized. So maybe talk a little bit about why that is. Is it really true that we're the most decentralized of any state in the union?
I don't know if we're the most decentralized. Okay. I apologize. I couldn't answer that question, but I mean, a lot of other states, when you look at the model of how they administer elections, a lot of it takes place at the county level, and they have precincts in different areas that are administering the election on behalf of the county. And while we do have county involvement with our elections here in Wisconsin, it's very minimal because we are the ones, as municipal clerks, we're saying how many ballots we need, who our candidates are, because we're the filing officers for our local candidates. We are getting all of our poll workers together. We are getting all of our absentees out. We're entering all of our voter registrations. So we are in charge of our own municipality from start to finish.
And so, because when I feel like this only became an issue of people thinking about how decentralized our elections are when, no one really thought about it, at least from my perspective, until 2020. Because when all of the fast changes of how are we going to conduct an election during a pandemic, and because of that decentralized model, so many of the decisions, because that's the way the model is, we're left up to individual clerks and individual offices, correct? And
yes.
Thus the criticism came of that model. And so what has been kind of since 2020, when y'all's job has been under a microscope and the amount of outsized attention and ridicule you've all been under, which is not deserved, has definitely been there. But as far as what has life been kind of pre and post the 2020 election when it comes to being a city clerk?
So, you know, I have to say I'm very fortunate in the community in which I serve that everybody is very appreciative. Everybody comes in, you know, whether it's the staff or the electors or just the general guests of our city, everybody's been very respectful and very kind, and they're very understanding of the hard work that we do. And that's not the case in all municipalities. So I really feel for those other clerks, because it is a hard job, and it's difficult sometimes to kind of stay out of the limelight and come under fire. But, you know, prior to 2020, we talked about 2012 being like the election year, because if anybody remembers, 2012 was the year of 6 elections. It was a lot.
What happened in 2012? I wasn't living here.
So in 2012, we had our 4 standard elections, like we normally have in an even numbered year. But then we also had the recall elections for Governor Walker. So we had a February primary, we had an April spring election, We had a May recall primary. We had a June recall election. We had an August partisan primary. And then we had the November general election.
Which was the presidential year. So that was Mitt Romney versus Obama. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
It was a big year. So, like, when we got done with 2012 and moved past it, we were like, oh, we never want to do that again. Because it was just, it was a lot. Yeah. Like, you were barely getting done with one election before you were starting another one. So there was a lot of hard deadlines. And then we moved into 2016, which number of elections was pretty standard for an even numbered year. But then we had the presidential recount. And that added a whole nother level to clerks and what was going on and kind of explaining the different facets and methods and procedures that we follow when it comes to election. And then we hit 2020. Yeah. And we always joke that, like, if we could handle 2020 the way we did, we can handle anything because it was such an interesting year, not just because we were in the pandemic, but also because of the political climate as well. So it was an interesting year, to say the least. At times it was very trying.
But you're still here. You didn't quit.
I didn't. Clerks' mental health has now, and it may sound silly, but it's really becoming in the forefront of what we are discussing as a municipal clerks board, our professional organization. Because after 2020, we saw a lot of clerks leave, a lot, because it was so trying and so difficult. So we're seeing, you know, clerks are burnt out, they're stressed out. And then we have new people coming in that have no idea, you know, and it's not their fault, but they just don't know how much is involved with elections. And then every other facet of the job, because just because you have an election doesn't mean that we're not posting agendas and getting stuff done on the other end. We can't stop. So we're really focusing on clerks' well-beings and having mentor clerks available for new clerks. And it's a little bit of a shift of how it used to be back in the old days.
Well, it doesn't sound like necessarily it's like every couple of years. It's been like every 4 years, it's basically been like, oh my gosh, how do we get through that? So here's fingers crossed that 2024 is not as crazy.
I guess we'll just have to see. I mean, you know, when it comes to like the election stuff and the procedures and the rules, we're good there. It's kind of the other outside stuff that's going to get thrown at us that we're like, okay, let's see how this goes.
Yeah. Which when we come back for the break, this is a state that loves to have court rulings come down basically up until the deadline of all of you trying to get ballots out. So there's that challenge. But also I think just having a conversation, what changes have happened since 2020 that were good or bad, and you don't have to say the opinion, but just kind of what people should know about our elections right now, and also what people should know for the election that is coming up on April 4th. Our guest is Lana Kropp, who is a 12-year veteran of the Wisconsin clerk world and currently serves as the city clerk of the city of Lake Geneva. We will be right back. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
They trade away.
We dream of a brand new start,
but we dream in the dark for the most part.
Dark as a tomb where it happens.
I've got to be in the room
where it happens.
I've got to know
where it happens.
I've got to know
where it happens.
I've got to be.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer.
For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold. 1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003. 125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football. You're about to find out. Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturday and Sunday at 1. On Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
There's so many songs about voting.
Gotta get you into that booth, into that booth.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And we are talking to Lana Kropp, who is a 12-year veteran of the Wisconsin clerk world. And she is currently the city clerk for the city of Lake Geneva. And we are talking to her about being a city clerk, what that means, and also elections in general, because we have one coming up in 18. Would you say it's so when you do the countdown, Lana, for how many days we have until the election, do you include Election Day? Or is it up until Election Day? So how many days would you say we have until the election?
So I'm sorry, I'm looking up at my calendar. I would say include Election Day.
So would that be 19 days then?
You're going to make me do math.
I know. We did this. But this has been a debate with us and one of the other talk show hosts on this channel. Because his show was the day after, or the hour after mine. And in the fall, I kept saying one day less than he was saying on his show. And so because I was like, no, it's the day you count until the day. He's like, no, you count the day because you can vote until the end of the day. And I was like, I was going to get your official opinion on how you feel about that.
She just wanted to win.
That's true, too.
So I think, if I had to look at it from that aspect, so 20 days prior to the election is the last day that you can register to vote online or through the mail, and that was the end of the day on the 15th.
Okay. So there you go.
Good to know.
There you go. All right. So I think I do want to get into everything people should know and remember, dates, deadlines for April 4th, but also with the tumultuousness of the 2020 election. We've obviously had a big election since then. We had huge turnout in the fall and seemingly without any drama. Right. And so as far as things that stayed the same, things that changed, welcome changes that happened coming out of was there lessons out of 2020 that you felt like got addressed and got adopted into how we're doing elections 2 years out, 2+ years?
I mean, I know that we had changes when it came to how people could return their absentee ballots. And that's kind of the biggest thing that's standing out in my mind. So prior to 2020 and even during 2020, you could use a drop box at your municipality to drop off your absentee ballot. That is not the case anymore. And you could have say a spouse or, you know, a family member or a friend drop off a absentee ballot for you as long as it was completed with all the necessary information. And that's no longer the case either, unless there are certain circumstances due to physical ability to do so. So those are the biggest changes that I can remember coming out of 2020. And I mean, I don't really have an opinion on them either way. You know, we are a steward to the lawmakers and to the election law, and whatever we need to do, we will do within the letter of the law.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think it's just because, like I said, it's sometimes hard for the average person. Like, I follow this stuff really closely because I talk about it. But for the average person to stay up to date with what they can, or when they're just trying to vote, because there's so many dates, you know, even being able to say early voting starts March 21st, but it doesn't start everywhere March 21st because not everywhere has early voting. And so, like, the struggle to get accurate, up-to-date information out to voters can be a struggle. And that's it's not even, you know, I just took this on and I'm trying, let alone for what you guys try to do as far as getting accurate information out that can be different depending on, because it is so decentralized. And so just trying to get... while you're here, get you to say, to tell us what has been changed so more people can be aware. But then I guess also while you're here, what should people know leading up to April 4th in the days that we have left?
The days, yeah, the countdown is on. So, you know, a couple things. If your municipality has a website, always check the website. We always try to keep dates and information regarding upcoming elections on our website. If not, you can always go to myvote.wi.gov and you can look up your name and your date of birth and figure out what's on your ballot. You can find your clerk's information. And a lot of times we input when we start in-person absentee voting. We are required by law to publish notices when it comes to election two in our official newspaper. So here in the city of Lake Geneva, you can always check the Lake Geneva Regional News. And they'll have it posted in there. And the other thing is you can always give us a call or shoot us an email. The more that we can inform our voters and give everybody the information, the better. Because as much as you would like to hope and rely on other sources to report the correct information, sometimes it's just better to hear it from the horse's mouth, as it were. So give us a call.
All right. That is good to know. Give them a call. And I guess the last question is, what could the average voter do to make your guys' life easier?
Oh.
Can we bring you guys snacks or something?
Is it just nice to you?
Yeah. You know, that is a big part of it is, you know, the understanding, again, like I said, that we are stewards to the law. So it isn't us, you know, as individuals that are making these changes. We are doing everything within statute that we are able to do. So there's certain things that we can and that we used to be able to do, and that we just can't anymore, or that we are now able to do that we weren't able to do before. So, you know, the good job, thank you so much, and the understanding, that goes a long way. If we know that we're making your lives easier and that you're happy with how we are running things and how things are going for you, that's what matters to us.
That is a great answer.
That is a wonderful answer.
You're saying understanding and empathy goes a long way? No.
It does. You know, what a crazy concept, right?
All right. Lotta Kropp is the city clerk for the city of Lake Geneva. Thank you so much for spending time with us. Good luck with the election. And I'm sure we'll have you back to give us more voting information in the future.
I would love it. Thank you so much for having me. All right. Happy St. Patty's Day.
You too. All right. We'll be back in a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
ABC News, I'm Mark Remillard. Switzerland's beleaguered Credit Suisse Bank has a buyer.
Deposits in Credit Suisse now on a much firmer footing with the announcement of a purchase of the Swiss bank by larger rival UBS. Art Hogan, chief market strategist at B. Riley, with why the news is reassuring on this side of the Atlantic.
What that does is reinstill confidence that we're not going to have a major banking event in the Eurozone. And if we can avoid that, we can likely avoid worries about contagion in the U.S. banking system.
Big picture, Hogan doesn't see systemic problems.
There are thousands of regional banks. We found three that were in trouble.
Saying the Swiss deal should give investors more confidence in the banking system as we begin a new week. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Chinese President Xi Jinping will meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin Monday and spend at least 2 days in Moscow. The world watching to see what comes of the meetings between the two leaders. Xi's government has not said what it hopes to accomplish, while Putin will likely seek support for his war effort in Ukraine. This is ABC News.
Dear hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. The doctor came in and said, we're going to amputate your leg. I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
Kids across America are going to school hungry. Millions of kids every day. Hungry kids get sick more often and can struggle in school. It can be harder for them to focus and learn. But one simple thing can help change all of this for a hungry child in America. Good healthy food and the energy it brings. With help from caring people across America, No Kid Hungry is providing healthy meals and hope to hungry kids so they can build better futures.
We want to ensure that all of our kids have healthy meals every day.
Thank you.
Thank you for helping feed our kids.
To learn more about ending child hunger in America, go to helpnokidhungry.org today.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. My name is Dan Schaefer. I'm your guest host today. We were just, for the last segment, joined by Paul Noonan. We were talking about Aaron Rodgers and what his future holds for his Green Bay Packers. Sounds like he's headed to the New York Jets. Sounds like something happened in his darkness retreat where something changed. But we're going to be continuing our series of conversations today about mayoral elections happening around the state and around the region. We talked to Dr. Kristen Lyerly in our first hour of the show about the mayor's race happening in Green Bay. And we are joined for our next segment by Scott Gordon, the publisher of Tone Madison, to talk a little bit about the race for mayor in Madison. Scott, thank you so much for joining the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dan.
So there's a lot of attention paid to the top of the ticket in the spring election, with the race for Wisconsin Supreme Court. But there is a lot going on down ballot in a lot of different communities across the state. One of those communities is Madison, where there is a race for mayor. So since I've been paying so much attention to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, paying attention to a number of other stories happening in Milwaukee. I haven't paid a whole lot of attention to what's been happening in these mayor's races. So Kristen was able to give me the lowdown about what's happening in Green Bay in our first segment. So what's been happening with the race for mayor in Madison?
So our incumbent mayor, Satya Rhodes Conway, who was first elected in 2019, has a challenger named Gloria Reyes, who has served on the Madison School Board and was deputy mayor under Paul Soglin, and also earlier in her career was a police officer. And it is an interesting race, and it's gotten kind of weird at a lot of turns. There were a couple other folks in the primary who weren't, you know, didn't come off as super serious. And it's been interesting to me that this is what the field's come down to, and that no one's running really to Satya's left. I think there's a lot of ways you could break it down, but I think the really interesting thing to me is how much this mayor's race grows out of all the conflict that's been happening in Madison recently over transit and housing and density. A big part of the agenda that Satya ran on in 2019 was making progress on some transit projects, including bus rapid transit. And the city has broken ground on construction for some of the bus rapid transit lines. And for those who aren't constantly thinking about bus rapid transit, it's a system where the bus has a dedicated lane and kind of expedited boarding and loading and stuff.
Higher frequency, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, it's a really promising development, and there've been a bunch of contentious turns in this debate, especially over 2021 and 22, there was this huge blow up about the proposal of routing buses down State Street, which is the logical thing to do if you need to get from east to west on, the isthmus of Madison. Mm-hmm. There just aren't a lot of, if you look at a map, there aren't that many ways to really do that well. And, a bunch of business owners and folks got together and kind of threw a tantrum over that, and were trying to delay it and trying to get the buses routed off of State Street. The Wisconsin State Journal ran approximately a million editorials calling for State Street to become a grand pedestrian promenade. And the way it is now, and the way that it'll probably kind of still be after bus rapid transit comes in, is that there will be transit and also still a lot of pedestrian friendly space. And those two things are at odds with each other. But the city ended up sticking with that routing, and it, upset a lot of people. And it definitely struck me as kind of a tantrum on behalf of certain business interests in Madison. I don't know if it was really about the buses per se, so much as, some folks kind of saying hey, you have to listen to us. And if we're not getting our way and we don't feel like we're being heard enough, then we're going to pitch a fit. We've also had a couple of really recent changes to zoning that are intended to basically encourage density, encourage more affordable housing. The housing market in Madison is really bad right now. If you're searching for an apartment here, the rents are getting ridiculous. It's very hard to find, a decent place in
anyone you talk to anywhere in Madison who's looking to buy a house is having a hard time.
No, it's terrible. Yeah. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And so everybody, I think, realizes that the city badly needs to add a lot more housing units because things are very tight, and
it's the fastest growing part of the state. Yeah.
Yeah. And that creates a whole other interesting dynamic where obviously you have people in single family home neighborhoods often, pushing back against these kinds of things and saying, well, this is going to screw up the character of our neighborhood. And there's all kinds of kind of ugliness under the surface there that is, I think, pretty obvious to see. So two big zoning things recently. One was transit-oriented development, which basically is a way of allowing denser development within a certain radius of the bus rapid transit lines that we're building. And then there was a change to the way that the city defines family and how many people, how many unrelated people basically can live together in a housing unit. And the idea behind changing that and loosening those restrictions was to make it easier for, you know, multiple people, even if they're not related, to, you know, split the rent on an apartment or a house together. And there's been a lot of blowback, but I think it's been interesting to see some sane things prevail after what has largely been a few very frustrating years with our leadership and with our Common Council.
So some fraught debates over the years with transit, with housing, and, you know, kind of entering into this mayor's race in Madison between Sacha Rhodes Conway, the incumbent mayor, and Gloria Reyes, who was the challenger who emerged from the primary. You know, I think we talked about this a little bit in our earlier segment with Kristen talking about the race for mayor in Green Bay. But I think that it's really interesting how, you know, some of these races can be, you know, your typical partisan left right of a Republican Democrat type of race for mayor. But in other cases, not so much. And I think, I'd rather these races, just from somebody who doesn't like the, you know, just the kind of typical right left arguments of these things, to get to a place of some sort of nonpartisan debate. And whether it's about transit, whether it's about housing, you know, I think it's interesting how those issues can be not your typical partisan issues, but are so important when you get down to the local level. And so what if some of the, you know, you sent me a story the other day about a debate happening between these two candidates and the kind of the way that the race is taking shape here.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because, of course, you know, both of these candidates are Democrats and both of them present themselves as progressive. And in the political landscape of Madison, you know, almost everybody wants to be considered a progressive, and people kind of throw that around so loosely that that it kind of loses a lot of its definition and gets a bit ridiculous. I think some of the housing and transit stuff that I'm talking about, and of course some of the debates over policing and so forth, have really brought out a just how much of a conservative streak there is in Madison. And of course, we're always talking here about how we have this self-image as a progressive city that really doesn't hold up against a lot of the conditions that we've created for people and a lot of the policies that that we live under here. But it really has brought out, I mean, I don't think it's like extreme to say that it's brought out this very pronounced, like, reactionary streak in a lot of Madison. When we were kind of following, you know, some Common Council meetings where they were debating these zoning changes, there were people really, you know, piling into public comment. A lot of them were arguing very eloquently for these zoning changes and like really came prepared and made thoughtful arguments. And then a lot of the people against, I think because they're so used to having their way as single family homeowners and as, you know, people who tend to be more likely to be white and more likely to have some money, I think they didn't like really bother to like come prepared with something, with anything thoughtful or substantive. And there were lots of things about, you know, this ruining single family neighborhoods and college students are going to like invade the neighborhood and screw everything up. And it just, there was a real asymmetry in the debate between like how hard one side was trying and how much the other was just not. And kind of there was a lot of like disingenuousness and exaggeration and hyperbole coming from the sort of anti-density, if you want to call it, side. And some really outlandish moments, honestly, in the public comment, which, I mean, it's nothing new if you watch a lot of government meetings and stuff, but like there are people who literally would say things like, may God protect our right to live in single family homes, things like that. I mean, you know, just framing this clear need that we have to house more people here and to get housing costs down so that people can afford to live here, framing that as just this kind of ridiculous, like, of attack on Old Glory and God or whatever. Like it was nuts. I mean, people were freaking out about like, oh God, there's going to be duplexes in my neighborhood now. These are incremental changes. They're nowhere near what is needed, but it's kind of the curse of Madison that we get like a little bit of the nice progressive things. And then this reaction that casts that as you know, extreme.
Yeah. It seems just like a very reactionary type of response to, you know, the realities of the challenges that Madison is facing with needing to build more housing, build more transit, house more people, keep housing costs down. You know, it reminded me, I lived in Seattle for a little while. It reminds me a lot of the type of debates that I would follow in Seattle, because they, you know, throughout the 2010s, a very fast growing city, Amazon grew exponentially. They've moved their headquarters downtown. They built all these new apartments and stuff like that. But there were all sorts of debates about, you know, keep preserving the integrity of the communities and keeping these single family housing. Well, at the same time, you have a growing homelessness crisis and a housing cost crisis and all these different things. And you think of these cities like a Madison or a Seattle as these progressive bastions, but when you get actually down to where the rubber meets the road, in a lot of these situations, you know, the debates can be very reactionary, can kind of. You know, veer into the territory that is kind of, you know, more of a conservative type of viewpoint when you really get down to it.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, we could spend a lot more time than we have here talking about like the way that these arguments get distorted. I have my issues with Sasha, and I wish that there were people challenging her who I felt were like doing something serious and substantive. And I'm sure like Gloria Reyes is capable of running a serious and substantive campaign, but it really, she just hasn't. And she very much comes off as just sort of like the candidate of cops and NIMBYs who want to push back on, you know, on some minor change. And the fact that like Sasha has at least stuck to her guns on some of these things and shown, you know, some serious commitments and some serious thought about policy matters. See, I mean, that counts for a lot, even with all the drawbacks.
You've been listening to our conversation with Scott Gordon from the publisher of Tone Madison. We've been talking about the race for mayor in Madison. Very important race. We'll continue to follow Tone Madison's coverage of that and all sorts of different things on your website. I encourage everybody to go check it out. Scott, thank you so much for joining us today on As Goes Wisconsin. We're going to be talking about some headlines when we get back after the break. And in the 1 o'clock hour, we're going to be joined by Justin Warland of Time Magazine, who is giving a talk in Milwaukee later this week about the Inflation Reduction Act. So, Scott, thank you so much for joining us here.
Thanks so much, Dan. I appreciate you.
We'll be right back.
You're a jet, you're a jet, all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day. When you're a jet, if the spit hits the fan, you got brothers around, you're a family man.
You're never alone,
you're never disconnected, you're home with your own.
When company's expected,
you're well protected. Then you
welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry, she is Jane Madnair. I'm missing the connection.
Stephen Sondheim.
Ah.
You had a note about Stephen Sondheim.
I did have a note about Stephen Sondheim. I didn't know where I was going to sneak it in. But despite he did die in 2021 at 91,
yes.
One of my favorite all-time musical theater contributors.
Did a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. Wrote a lot of really good lyrics.
Yeah.
But his final musical is going to premiere off-Broadway in September. And so it is called Here We Are. It's going to make its off-Broadway world premiere this fall with Joe Mantello directing.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know much beyond that, but the director has won the Tony two times. Formerly known as Square One, the final musical composed by Sondheim before his death in 2021 will be staged at The Shed. And that's kind of all the information there is.
All right. So he wrote the lyrics to the Jet song from West Side Story.
Yeah.
He did not write the music, but he wrote the lyrics.
And so I didn't know we were going to talk about that. And so
I just wanted to throw... I love that song. See, that's the song that I used to dance around in my room, and I was the Sharks and the Jets, and I did everybody... Oh, yeah. So I can say... I know all the lyrics to that song.
I know most of the lyrics to that entire soundtrack, I would say. It's crazy how lyrics stick with you like that.
Definitely.
Same thing with Into the Woods. Like, if you put on Into the Woods, I probably know most of the lyrics.
Anyway,
so we'll see how much time we have to, if we want to do both. But Doug LaFollette retiring.
He's been there.
Oh, he's been there since 78, I think.
78.
So basically, he's 74.
Wow.
LaFollette was first elected as Secretary of State in 1974. And he served a single term before mounting an unsuccessful challenge to be lieutenant governor.
Ah.
So then he went back and ran for Secretary of State again in 1982. And he has been the Secretary of State since. And that means through Republican sweeps, all the, you know, the Walker years, the Tommy Thompson years, the years that, like, Republicans did very well in the election, Doug LaFollette still won. Year after year after year, including as recent as last fall.
Yeah, he just got reelected.
And that's why this is a little sneaky. Because he had a challenger. I'm forgetting her name, but it was the leader of the Dane County Democratic Party primaried him and lost. But I remember because I did a video about this last year, because the woman who was the Republican who challenged him in the general was, I'm not going to say a straight up election denier, but
embraced the idea,
you know, had some questions about our election integrity. And, you know, similar to other states where had Republicans won, the governor had Tim Michaels won. Had the woman who was running for Secretary of State won, had there been more of a Republican sweep, they were going to restore a lot of the responsibilities that had been stripped from the Secretary of State to put a lot more power back in the hands of one person to be controlling our elections. And so it was kind of this conundrum or this catch, I don't know if catch 22 is the right word, but to have someone challenging Doug LaFollette, who's basically been unbeatable
For decades,
even though his job, what his role has become is...
It's been so stripped
down.
It's
like he basically protects the state seal, and that's...
Because there's a lot of threats towards the state seal.
Yes, so it's not like there's a lot going on in that job, but there was, at the risk of, had his challenger beat him in the primary... She had a lot less name recognition than he does.
Definitely.
So then you create a situation where she may not be able to beat the Republican, despite the fact that he's proven that he can beat Republicans for so long. And it was like this whole thing. So now to have him basically just win so that he can step down is a little like,
And give Governor Evers the appointment.
Yes. And, you know, and like, Sarah Godlewski, friend of the show,
yeah,
and everything. But seeing that a little bit is like, oh, you literally just ran so you could retire and someone else can get appointed for the next 4 years before they have to run again.
All they are doing is following the Supreme Court appointment playbook of Mitch McConnell. I have no problem with this whatsoever.
Good.
None.
I don't have a problem. I'm not going to lose sleep over it, but I raise an eyebrow. He is like 84, though.
It's time. It's time.
Him and his sun hat that he wears everywhere. But yeah, I mean, it's...
And you got to give him props for being a public servant for all of these decades in what is arguably one of the least sexy jobs in state government.
I know. He's 82. Sorry, I misspoke. 82. Didn't want to take 2 years away from him. But 82, Doug LaFollette is retiring. Sarah Godlewski will step in. So she'll also she'll probably still be able. I wonder if what she'll have to do with Women Win Wisconsin. Can you still be running a pack if you are in office? I mean, I guess she was technically still state's treasurer when she started Women Win Wisconsin in the fall. Because just because she was running for Senate doesn't mean she didn't still have her elected position.
We'll have to have her back on because she was just on a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're still doing the rallies and everything. So I don't know what the conflict, if there is any conflict there as far as running an organization like that while still holding office.
See, and now I want the next time that we get to have her on the show, I want her to come in so she can bring the state seal. It'll be very exciting.
Take pictures with it. Make it our profile picture across my new LinkedIn picture.
Oh, it'll be huge.
All right. Well, that will do it for any serious parts of today's show. Well, that's not true. We're going to have fun in the next hour. We're going to do a lot of St. Patrick's Day topics, maybe tell you some facts you didn't know about St. Patrick's Day.
Some surprising stuff.
Maybe we'll hear from some of you of how you celebrate St. Patrick's Day, even if you're not Irish. But also a conversation around making fun of swaths, making fun of the Irish for certain tropes, but also making fun of Wisconsin for some tropes, and who gets to do it, and can you do it as long as you do it well? We'll have a conversation about that all coming up in the next hour. Stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin. More soon.
You're the top cat in town.
You're the gold medal kid with the heavyweight crown.
When you're a jet,
you're the swinginest thing. Little boy, you're a man.
Little man, you're a king.
The jets up in here. Our cylinders are clicking. Sharks will stick clear.
Cause every Puerto Rican's a lousy chicken.
Here come the jets like a cat. How the hell someone gets in our way. Someone don't feel so well.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Mark Remillard. Switzerland's beleaguered Credit Suisse Bank has a buyer.
Deposits in Credit Suisse now on a much firmer footing with the announcement of a purchase of the Swiss bank by larger rival UBS.
Art Hogan, chief market strategist at B. Riley, with why the news is reassuring on this side of the Atlantic.
What that does is reinstill confidence that we're not going to have a major banking event in the Eurozone. And if we can avoid that, we can likely avoid worries about contagion in the U.S. banking system.
Big picture, Hogan doesn't see systemic problems.
There are thousands of regional banks. We found three that were in trouble.
Saying the Swiss deal should give investors more confidence in the